Well, we're going to take your phone calls with Brad Steiger, your monster stories. And up next, we'll talk about the Headless Horseman. Ooh, get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Brad, before we get to calls, let's take a few more of these incredible stories from your book, Real Monsters, Gruesome Critters, and Beasts from the Dark Side, The Headless Horseman. Since I was a kid, that story of Ichabod Crane always just chilled me. Tell me about this one.
Well, again, this is when our good friend Tim Beckley once went up to the Tarrytown, home of the famous Headless Horseman, and spent some time investigating. But I should mention the real story here is that Tim's own family has a Headless Horseman.
Really?
His grandfather, and he never talked about it. He only told a couple people, and he wouldn't talk about it until the time he died. He said that, and they finally found out because he was just almost put into another state of reality by what he had seen. And from what the family can piece together, he was behind the barn one night doing chores, and a headless Yankee soldier, circa the Civil War time, came up behind him. Now, he was a strict Baptist, and he knew he wasn't supposed to see what he was seeing, but he saw this ghost of a headless Union soldier. So Tim then was inspired to go up, and he, again, the story, of course, where Ichabod Crane sees the headless horseman coming toward him. Interestingly, George, there are headless horseman stories all over the United States, and they are in Texas, they are in Carolina, they are in California. It seems that having... And not always headless, I shouldn't say, but ghostly horsemen. Now, I've always been fascinated by ghosts at the side of the road, not the old phantom hitchhiker story,
which
probably goes back to Shakespeare's time. But those who actually, now, I would just, if you would permit me, on Arkansas Highway 64, if it's a dark and rainy night, you might see the spirit of Laura Starlatta, who, and this is terrible, on the way to her wedding, she was accosted by a gang of thugs and beaten to death.
Oh, my.
Now, this is on her tombstone. She died a month before her 20th birthday in 1899. Gentle stranger passing by, as you are now, once was I. As I am now, so you must be. Prepare yourself to follow me. Now, again, to demonstrate that every myth, every legend has its origin, I received an email from a Mr. Latta, who is a descendant of Laura Starlatta, the family of course she had no children, the poor woman, to indicate that as you're reading this book and you are saying, wow, that's a pretty wild story, remember, these are true. Myth becomes reality, reality becomes myth, and these stories live on. And I'm just fascinated when I get so often someone will say, well, gee, you're describing the house that I grew up in. I remember my mother talking about when she had some ghost hunters come into the house. And it gives me that eerie little feeling, you know, that, again, the legend, the truth, the story lives on. But the Headless Horseman is a prototype myth or legend that appears again and again throughout history. And as I say, we have them all over the United States. In Texas, it's that of a vaquero, Mexican cowboy who was murdered in a heinous way, and you see him riding outside of Dallas. You see another one outside of Fort Worth. There's another one in San Antonio. And again, right down on the main highway 5 in California, people have seen a horseman, a phantom horseman, galloping at night. So these legends come to life, and they are perpetuated by our belief, by our sightings. But you see, they all have a beginning in reality, in a real story, a real tragedy. And I think it's sad that, I mean, how many happy ghosts do we hear about?
Not a lot. Maybe Casper. That's about
yeah,
it, right?
That's about it. But ghosts then are usually born of tragedy and violence and great pain and suffering. And somehow then part of, we'll understand it one day. I know we will. But right now something lives on. And I don't think many of these stories have anything to do with survival after death. I think that's in another category. I think ghosts are ghosts. I think they're somehow projected onto the environment where the terrible deed took place. So here you will see Miss Lotta, Misty Laura on a misty night. And I just got a shiver when I heard from, you know, a surviving descendant of, you know, this. And again, I must confess, you know, I'd heard this story so often, and I thought maybe it was a legend. No, there are human beings connected to it that make it real.
Let's take some calls, Brad, and more of your stories as well. Jason's in Baltimore, Maryland, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, I've been listening to the show. It's a great show.
Thank you.
What I would like to bring up that I feel like not only this guest, but a lot of guests that comment in this field lack to disprove is the scope that psychosis can engulf the perception or belief of a person that claims to experience something. And I think a lot of the times people that go out to investigate certain things, maybe through just optimism, you hear a lot of evidence towards supernatural occurrences, but you don't hear a lot of the things that that somebody used to an empirical scientific system, you don't hear a lot of the things to eliminate certain elements that could be used to disprove something. And I would ask your guest, not only what steps does he take towards eliminating variables such as psychosis, which can contribute to a lot of what you might, you know,
sure.
a lot of the evidence. Right, things like that. And I can say that, you know, nobody asks those questions because they want so bad for something to work out that way, especially with things like the electronic voice recordings where you have a lot of static and people claim to hear certain words, but that is really no different than an inkblot test where somebody says, oh, yeah, I see a guy.
It's Jesus, you know, or something. Yeah.
Well, anything. But, I would ask your guest, what steps does he or what steps do people take in general to preclude these kind of psychotic variables?
All right. Very good. Good question, Jason. Brad, there's no question that when these events occur, the first thing that investigators do or should do is look for the natural occurrence.
Of course.
Or the fact, you know, if the witness is, you know, not whacked out or not, right?
Right. I would have appreciated this young man's advice probably in about 1950. But, you know, it's been a long time, long investigations. Obviously, he is completely unfamiliar with the scientific literature of the field, the extent to which so many scientists have gone to debunk certain things and others to prove things. And I think he's probably, had a diet of seeing various ghost shows on television. And I will say, honestly, I don't watch those because, again, the EVP so often is, as he said, just a scratchy sound. And again, the young people or the investigators are stumbling around in the dark and they bump into each other and say, oh, something touched me. So, again, I if that's his notion of what psychical research is, then that's as far away from what I and my colleagues do as, as anything could be if you read the literature of the British Society for Psychical Research. Now, I cut my teeth on reading those classics and the classic investigators and researchers and some of the astounding. And these men were pure scientists. Good Lord, they were crooks who invented, you know, the X-ray and so many others. So, again, we are confusing entertainment with research. Whenever we would investigate a haunted house, we would do as much research as possible. And again, the vast majority are, squirrels in the attics or the pipes. I appreciate the question, but it displays a certain naivete about and a complete lack of awareness of true research and entertainment. And it's not his fault. It's not his fault because we're being bombarded by this. So again, the will to believe, the majority of investigators start out really with the will to disbelieve. I had theories completely worked out to explain every type of haunting, and I had them disintegrated one by one because of personal encounters. So the young man's advice is very good. For all those who are just beginning their research, they should heed what he said. But bless you, my boy. those of us that have been in the field for decades, are really that naive.
Next up, we have Julie in Slimar, California, first-time caller. Go ahead, Julie.
Yes, I really enjoy your show.
Thank you, Julie.
And your guests are most enlightening and unique. And what I wanted to just give you a little picture of, and then a question. I'm 56 years old, and since I was a little girl, there was always a presence. The best I could describe it would be a figure that appeared to be a man, black. From a little girl, a trench coat type thing, hat, and he's there.
Like a shadow?
Yes, yeah. And he's there. And my heart would race and pound, and I'd kind of blink my eyes, and of course he's not. And this followed me through my life to the point where I would go walk to the closet, open the door, everything's fine. I mean, I do whatever I want to do. And then there's another time where I know, I can feel the presence. He is behind that door. And if it's a he, I don't know. But it has followed me. And what I found is that in certain houses, certain places, residences, and parts of the country that we live, have lived, this particular shadow figure, if you will, did not follow me in every place. He followed me all over except this one particular place. It was a 90-acre ranch up in L.A. County near the ski areas. And he never, the presence was not there. But any place else that we've lived, his presence is there. My heart pounds, and I know that if I turn quick, I get sort of a glimpse of him. And I'm always thinking, am I imagining? Am I? No, because I'm getting this reaction and this this absolute energy force. I don't know how to explain this. Is this something that you would attribute to a ghost, or how would you explain something like this?
Well, again, I'm not there with you, and I can't truly know how I would respond. I think we have all, those of us who, you know, do this sort of thing as an investigation to try to find out and identify what this phenomena might be. And I think there's a wide, wide range of phenomena. Did you ever feel it was someone you knew? It was a dearly departed one? Did you feel it might be an angel, a guide? You said you feel if you turn quickly, you could see, but obviously you've chosen not to do that. Do you have a certain apprehension of what you might see?
Yes, yes, of course I do. When someone had mentioned to me, I don't feel it's a psychosis and that nothing had triggered it.
No. The word psychosis is just too quickly thrown around these
days. Yes, I agree. I have to tell you that I had mentioned this to a psychiatrist, and I I get this feel. And this one particular psychiatrist had said to me, what if you close your eyes and you took off the hat, would it really be a man, you know, a male figure, or would it be a female figure?
Mm-hmm.
I found that made my blood just, you know.
But you seem to feel it's a male figure, though.
And most people do, Brad, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're describing a very interesting phenomena, which has, I suppose, been nowhere more delineated than on Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
George has done numerous shows on what have come to be called shadow people. And I remember years ago when Art asked me, well, you've been working with shadow people for years, what are shadow people? Well, George, at that time, what I said was, well, in the Native American tradition, the shadow person is over your left shoulder, and it is a representation of death, and must always speak to you in the truth, because, you know, over the right, that's probably your guide, the left is death, and he must always tell you the truth. Well, I terrified a good number of listeners that night inadvertently. I hadn't meant to do that. To me, that's what a shadow person was. It was from the Native American tradition. But you have done innumerable shows on shadow people, and I think here again we've just become more aware. Maybe the veil is getting thinner between worlds. Maybe these are multidimensional beings who are studying us for some reason to see how we emotionally respond to certain either stress situations or how we really react, or maybe they're, you know, some phenomena that we can't guess yet. But people are certainly having these experiences, and I don't doubt for a moment that you're having genuine experiences.
We're going to come back with more stories with Brad Steiger, more of your calls as well. Elliot from Montana sends a text, wants to know why movies and TVs portray monsters as being green. That's because it's a great color for TV and movies. They show up great. We'll be back. Well, next hour, full moon Fridays, yep, we're going to take your open line calls. When we come back, though, we'll take the rest of your calls with Brad Steiger with his latest book, Real Monsters, Gruesome Critters, and Beasts from the Dark Side. Brad, what are these stories of flying humanoids all over cities, farms, you name it?
Very fascinating, very fascinating. Again, it's one of those stories when you first hear them, you say, well, it had to be mistaken, you know, it must have been a big bird, whatever. And then the individual says, no, no, it was a human. I thought, well, was there a wire? Was there something? Was he hoisted in some way? Was he dangling from a helicopter? And no, these reports come from North America, Canada, Mexico, South America, of sometimes humans just dangling in the air as if they're watching. And one of the first stories that I really took seriously came from a nurse at a major hospital. And she swore. And the police got reports, too. And you begin to trace these stories, and then some of them become really quite frightening. A police officer in Mexico got a call from a neighborhood saying, there is a woman flying over our roofs. And, well, she, and what do you mean she's flying over? She's flying over our roofs, and she's swooping down at people. And the policeman went out, you know, rather skeptical, or what's he going to see? And as he approached this one neighborhood, there before his startled eyes was a woman looking almost like a classical wild hair, ugly face, hideous face, swooping down at him and smashing into his windshield. And the only thing he could do is back up, back up, back up, and then he hit the curb and he was stranded, and this entity was pounding, and he didn't know whether to get the shot. He was actually stunned. He was actually paralyzed. And finally then the woman flew off, and his, you know, superiors interrogated him hour after hour, but all the people in the neighborhood said that is true. At least he chased it off. This woman was swooping down on us, a flying woman. Now, these kind of stories come, as I said, all the way down. I have reports from Argentina and Chile and Mexico and the United States of people seeing flying humanoids. Sometimes they have wings. Sometimes they don't. What they are, who knows? But again, these are stories told, and we should always emphasize, or I should emphasize, that these are coming from people who, you know, are not prone to hallucinations. They are not looking for these kind of encounters, but they have them anyway. And to try to explain them, I don't have any easy answers, and neither do they. But collecting them and putting them into some fashion where we can deal with them, or at least analyze them and say, what is going on here? What is going on? These things have been seen ever since and probably before humans stood upright. Who are they really?
And what do they want?
What do they want? And then we get back to, again, the basic question that I like to think every one of my books has three questions. Who are we? Where are we going? What is our destiny? But who are we really? Why are we here? And what is our destiny as a species? Those are the questions that I'm really concerned about. Who exactly are we?
Good point. Let's take some more calls. Medford, Oregon, Stephen is with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to share this experience. I lived out in the woods out in Rogue River, and one night, you know, it was a stressful night and kind of late, and it was like midnight, 1 o'clock, and I had a kid that woke up from a bad dream. And so I was dealing with the stressful situation from that. But they're all bedded down, and I walked out to my porch. And the kid's grandparents' house, the house we were living in, had the neighboring house that they lived in, was like 25, 30 feet away. And like I said, it's rather secluded. And a motion light sensor on the grandparents' house, which they were gone for a weekend on a tractor show. And so I knew nobody was there. And I saw the silhouette coming down the driveway when the sensor light on their porch went off. And I could see the silhouette of, you know, a head and shoulders and kind of, you know, weaving around. And all I could think of my stress was, you know, we're out in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, my anger starts going up thinking I'm going to have this confrontation. And I'm on my porch. And as I said, you know, 25, 30 feet away and kind of to the rear of the house I'm on. And I could see the, you know, the silhouette. When I had turned my head to take a drag off my cigarette, you know, I'm going to throw it down and confront this guy. When I took my drag, I felt that spidey sense go off of being watched. And I'm serious. And from me just freezing there with the cigarette in my mouth, I just quickly turned my head. And what I thought was a skinhead, you know, like it had the high top tennis shoes, just at a quick glance, you know, and like one of those Air Force jackets, you know, flight jackets and a bald head. Well, he was parallel to me, facing out to the front like I was, and he had his head turned to me. And just in that quick, I'm going to throw down the cigarette and, hey, what are you doing, you know? But then it clicked as I had taken the steps to him. He had taken two wide steps and then jumped up in the air, but had his head on me the whole time. And as I realized, this is not a skinhead breaking into my kids' grandparents' house. This is, you know, something not. And, you know, the high top tennis shoes were like clawed. It looked like an owl. It had big eyes, you know, with the mm-hmm. like cat's mm-hmm. eye. Mm-hmm. And it had, did you ever see the movie Spawn, how his cape kind of would willow behind it like a silk curtain?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what I thought was the flight jacket turned into like butterfly wings that kind of had that elusive, you know, little wavy look to it. And as I said, when I, you know, threw down the cigarette and took a couple of steps, like I'm thinking in my head, how did he get down the drive mm-hmm. and around the corner to the house that quick and mm-hmm. and know that I was even there? And like I said, the realization, and this is probably important to that caller, Jason, because perception does have a lot to do with it. Had I not seen, you know, it's just weird in relativeness. The nightmare my son had, he was woken up by a shadow straight out from his dream. And I've been harassed with those on and off in my life, not understanding their purpose,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, yeah, so my senses and tension was up from having watched my son wake out of a nightmare to telling, you know, my son telling the shadow, get away from me, you know, really. And, yeah, so my perception on... I thumbed through a book, and it mentioned somebody, and I think it was Stryber, maybe. Somebody just showed me a book that what I saw could have been either a Mothman or a Nephili.
Or it could have been.
I have no idea. I've had interactions with Greys throughout my life. And,
or it could have been the Boogeyman.
Well, I thought, yeah, I don't know, because, yeah, once my mind realized that's not a person.
Right.
You know,
because you said the sun awakened from a nightmare.
And it was a shadow, because when I came around the corner in the room and he was wrestling, I could see it, and it was standing halfway bent over him. And he woke up out of a dead sleep before I could say anything. But it was within 20 minutes after that of getting him back to sleep and going out on the porch for my cigarette, you know. And
well,
it was,
you joined the ranks of millions of people who have these encounters.
My question to you, Brad, was going to be, why are there so many encounters?
Well, see, here again, I think... Okay, it's a double-edged sword we have now. People aren't afraid to speak out. When I began researching, I mean, there weren't any radio shows like yours, you know. If I was ever on the radio, it would be, you know, a very hostile and aggressive host and picking faults and everything. And again, the tried and true response to everything is, well, there must be a psychosis, or he must be psychotic. Everyone, you know, that had any experience was afraid of being called insane, was afraid of being laughed at, was afraid of being ridiculed. And, you know, after 170 books now, you know, people have been writing to me since they were 10 and 11 years old, and those are minds I've either illuminated or twisted, depending on one's point of view. But people are not as afraid to report these things now, because they realize, you know, we love company. We are more assured if we can speak out when someone says, well, I had a similar experience. We find that this is part of what it is to be human. This is an essential part of what it is to be human, is to have these mystical experiences. It's truly an aspect of our existence here on Earth. And it's been denied or put into rigid conventional religious structures for so long
that now at last people are finding that they can speak out. They won't be laughed at. They won't be called insane. And they are sharing this because this is part of the human experience, a very vital part of the human experience. And the sooner we approach it as dispassionately as possible, the sooner we're going to find out, as you put it, George, what's really going on.
Next up, Randy in Dayton, Ohio. Go ahead, Randy.
Hey, George and Brad, how you doing?
Good.
Okay.
Hey, first of all, George, your Skype number is zip code for
Salem, Oregon.
Yes, sir. I try to send that. This is Moondog.
Okay, Nighthawk Zone.
Nighthawk Zone member, yeah. Brad, you're such a wonderful, storyteller. Your books are fantastic. I've got a question for you, and I've also got a story I'd like to share with everyone.
Let's go with the story first. Go ahead, Moon.
Okay, years ago, me and Mooncat, my wife, Kathy, we were at Portland, Oregon, going to Klamath Falls, Oregon, to pick up a load. We were right beside of a, we're running like sort of parallel to a river, and we had to stop on the side of the road. It's a real little place to stop to let our little dachshund out to use the restroom. So we, I've had a red truck, I know the woods and the pines are green and the water was blue.
Right.
And we got out there and was just fascinated with how beautiful the area we were in. All of a sudden it just went gray. And we both looked at each other and said, there is someone that wants us out of here right now. And we were thinking, there's Bigfoot over there or something. I mean, it was gray. It was honestly the God's gray. The truck was gray. We were gray. The dog was gray. The river was gray. And
how long, Moondog?
Let's say probably 2 minutes to get out of a truck, and we probably stood there for about 30 seconds, and then it just like, my God, everything went gray, and it was like someone was saying, leave and leave
That's
now.
Strange, yeah.
Fascinating.
And, I bet you're a wonderful storyteller around the campfire. I mean, I can listen to you all.
You better have a flashlight though when you go into your tent.
Right. Well, we hear things that are urban legends like the Mothman,
right.
Bigfoot.
Right.
We hear things about the lady he was talking about that was beaten to death. You got the lady up in Chicago that was going to a party in a dress.
Right.
And it's what makes this show here. If it's defunct or if it's true, it's all right. I mean, I've seen a UFO and I've seen a Chupacabra, okay? I've seen them, and I've experienced things. I sat down on a step one day and I told a ghost to leave my apartment.
Right.
And I got up in my apartment and I told him to leave. I said, I'm going to set you free. You just leave. You need to leave. And he's been there for 2 years.
Did he go?
I went upstairs. I come through the closet, the basement door. There is my basement door, my door, and there is a front entrance door to the apartment. And as I got into my apartment, the all three doors opened at the same time, and I felt this cold breeze that lasted for about 2 hours from my knee down to my ankle. I swear to God, I told Kat, I said, whoever or whatever it was that occupied the stairs, because it was like you said, Brad, it's what you look over on your left or your right shoulder. Every time we went down there to do laundry, every time I went to do laundry, I always looked over my shoulder because I knew something was there. And
your spidey sense went off too, huh?
I tell you, I sat down on that step and I said, okay, look, I'm not afraid of you. You haven't done nothing to me. You bugged the hell out of me. You scare me to death. I want you to leave. I'm going to set you free. Leave. Go.
That you did precisely the right thing. I don't analyze people. And I don't mean to offend you, but you seem like a very down-to-earth person who has probably all of his life dealt with things realistically and necessarily as they came up. And you probably don't spend a lot of time lying on your bed at night worrying if the boogeyman is under the bed, because if he were, you would just tell him to leave.
Why is it, Brad, when people are in a car at night and they're adjusting the rear view mirror, they always think they're going to see eyes looking
or
somebody behind them? How many people actually go into a car and look behind them, primarily at night, to see if there's anybody back there?
Always. And they
Weird. Why?
And they should. Well, the point you're getting at, of course, is, again, this is, I think, in our genes. This is, you know, when we first became human, we had to always be looking over our shoulder because there truly was something stalking us. That was the thing I meant to mention with the big cats. You know, the cat, the big cat, is our only natural enemy. It's the only animal that hunts us. And that's why when
it stalks us.
Yeah, that stalks us. And I think that's another reason why it is so frightening when these creatures, and again, we should bring up, and I should bring up, that in each of those cases, you know, of course, the investigators have checked to see if there's a zoo nearby and the creature got out, or cat got out, or if there was a circus in town, or all of these things. Those are checked, and I should say, I guess I take it as a matter of someone understanding that by the time the cases are in the book, you know, as much investigation as possible has been done. And I don't say I'm infallible by any means, but after 55 years of interviewing people, I can generally
tell. You know.
When someone's putting me on, or someone's had a hallucination, or for some reason, as I say, I'm not saying I'm infallible, but you get to be pretty sharp after 55 years of interviewing people in this field, as do you, my friend.
What would you say then, Brad, about so many of these cases? Because you and I both know these folks aren't all whacked out.
No, they're not. I have included especially people who I've corresponded with in some cases for decades. Others have been recommended. As I said, they're ex-military, or they have government positions, local government positions. They're down-to-earth, solid people who probably the last thing they thought of when they went into the woods. In one case, the gentleman was going in to work an old gold mine and had a relationship with a Bigfoot that lasted for years, where the Bigfoot would leave him something and some sign, and he would leave the Bigfoot apples. And this went on for years. And the last thing he was interested in was having a relationship with a Bigfoot. And yet it happened. So these are stories from people who are as salt of the earth and down to earth as one could ask for.
The name of Brad's book, Real Monsters, Gruesome Critters and Beasts from the Dark Side. You can find it all over the place. You know where to look. We'll be back in a moment with Full Moon Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM.